welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Sarah Fenton, filling in for Stan Dostrzewski. And with me in the studio here today is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Thank you for being here. If you have a question for Mayor Dennis, call us at 765-496-1999 or send an email to ask@wbaa.org. First topic on tap for today's program, City Hall. It's been announced the building on Navajo Drive is finally coming down. About 2 years ago, they discovered mold in the building after the pipes froze and burst. Can you tell me what's happening with that space now? Will it become something new?
Well, first off, there's a lot of moving parts when it comes down to eliminating, I guess, an eyesore, specifically when it's governmental property. There's certain things that we have to go through. One of the reasons why it took so long to take the building down was because we had some issues involving an insurance claim and the payout because of that insurance claim. If you guys remember back, we actually had a couple issues in dealing with City Hall. The first was a leak that happened when it got really cold out and a pipe burst. And that leak was actually contained to the basement area. And so we did a fairly decent job in remediating that. The second leak happened sometime later when a hatch on the top of the roof blew open and a lot of rain came in. And just for those that may think that I did not leave the hatch open, that was one of the rumors that was circulating around. So I didn't do that. A lot of water came in. We actually had about 3 or 4 inches of water standing in the council chambers. So that created a real huge problem. But unbeknownst to us is after the first flood, a lot of mold grew in City Hall in between the walls. We had, it's a concrete structure. It was a concrete foundation and there was some drywall. Obviously it separated the concrete from the outer side. And so mold, it was a really amazing breeding area for mold. So the mold grew relatively quickly in between the two floods. And so when we started, we tried to see what we could do insofar as staying in that building. But the air quality was so bad. We had it tested and we realized that we needed to leave. So we got city services out of there. Obviously, we sent some of the folks to the police department and the rest of us went down to Morton, and we've been staying there ever since. So the process now of taking the building down is a little more involved because of what happened. There was some damage to the building, some records needed to be copied, and some other areas, some other items that were stored there needed to be assessed, and there was a cash value because of that damage. And so we had some back and forth between the attorneys and the insurance companies, but that's been remediated. We are now in a position to where we can start the process of taking the building down. And again, the presumption is that we get a great big wrecking ball out there and off it goes. But there's things that we need to make sure that the building is going to be in a condition to take down. First of which, obviously, we need to do a final run through to make sure all the stuff of value is out, get all the records out. And then we also had fiber that connected to the building. We need to get that pulled away as well. And then finally, we need to make sure that there's some hazardous material in there. Buildings that were built, in the late 60s and early 70s had a lot of asbestos around them. The pipes were wrapped in asbestos, and even some of the tiles that we use were involved with asbestos. So we need to get that remediated, and then once all that is taken care of, then we can take the building down. Now,
and
that,
so what's
that
gets happen?
I know you're gonna now, go okay well, okay nice
park,
John now
what put a new building up for City Hall? Or?
Well, the conversation about City Hall is, as a mayor guy, every time you go somewhere, people have questions that they really want to get answers to. But I would say, bar none, the number one question outside of State Street that I have from the citizens of West Lafayette is, what are you going to do about City Hall?
Really?
And I was given the same answer, and that's I don't know. The first issue is making sure that we get the building down and the space cleared. The actual footprint that the old building stood upon is too small because of the number of employees that we have, because of the number of spaces that we would need for parking when you have council meetings and Board of Works meetings and all that. We don't have enough space in that particular geographic footprint. They actually dealt with that issue before by putting a little parking pad off of Salisbury Street on the south end of the bank. Mm-hmm. So we really don't have enough room to put a facility on that spot and then accommodate all the parking. So what we're going to do is we're going to do kind of what elected people do really well, and that's seek public input. We're going to go ahead and have some sensing sessions in the community and just try and get a better idea of what people think City Hall is. Obviously, the presumption of the old City Hall was that it was a place to warehouse your elected officials and then conduct public business. But a lot of what we do in local government now can be accessed through the internet. Mm-hmm. A lot of our meeting minutes and things like that can be accessed through the internet.
Yeah, and that was going to be one of my questions, is like, how important is it to have a central City Hall in, so many city services are dispersed mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. and Morton Center has been... You've been housed there for mm-hmm. a couple of years, correct? And
yep.
the city has not fallen down.
Nope.
So how important is it that you have, is there any potential that Morton could just be a permanent move?
Well, Morton was sort of a knee-jerk reaction to an emergency situation. We had some available space there, and it didn't really cost us anything to move into one of our own buildings. So that was kind of a business decision. But it really does come down to a philosophical issue in a way. What is City Hall? Do the citizens of West Lafayette want to have a structure or a facility that represents local government, that can be a structure of pride where they can point to and say, look at our City Hall? Or are we now technologically advanced enough to where we could do a lot of things via the web, via the internet, via the connectivity with cell phones? I don't think that we've reached that point in time to where we're going to be having virtual council meetings and things, because that would be kind of a drag. I really enjoy those things and the interactivity that we have with our citizens. But I think situationally, we need to find out where people want it. Logistically, I think we need to find out what they want with their City Hall, and then go ahead and see how we can accommodate that understanding that we'll be getting. But it really does get down to cost too. Regardless of where we put it, there's going to be some cost associated with that, and we need to make sure that what we do is fiscally responsible. We in the city do have some available space that we could utilize, but again, that might not be in the best location. But as it stands right now, once we do get the building taken down, our intent is to turn that particular area back into a green space and then figure out from that point on what we'll do with that particular parcel.
And so after that comes public meetings, I'm assuming?
Yeah, that's probably what we'll do. We'll go ahead. We've got a new director of development, mm-hmm. and he has been involved in doing strategic planning and things like that. So we might get Eric Carlson, our new director of development, involved and see if he might not want to lead that charge about finding out what the community wants.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Today's guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Next on DEP, I want to ask you about this proposed ordinance for microchipping pets. Can you tell me a little bit about
Sure.
what the city's involvement is with that?
Sure. We have a really good relationship with Almost Home, our animal shelter. And we have actually, I used to do this show is called Fun with the Mayor. It was a video show, and one of the segments that we did was actually with the Humane Shelter, and it was in that particular show where we were introduced to the concept of implanting microchips into your pets. And the oddity about that is that it was a relatively new concept to us here locally. And we were wondering, like everybody, is it Big Brother invading into our private life and these kind of things? It was made abundantly clear to us that that's absolutely not the point. All of our shelters across the country are just overwhelmed with strays. And we feel pretty strongly about the fact that we don't like to be in the business of killing animals. So we want to try and do anything that we can to reunite pets with their owners. Obviously, we've got a process of tagging and licensing, but sometimes that falls a little short. So we felt that the next step would be to go through the chipping process.
I'm going to stop you. Can I just ask what a microchip has inside of it?
Like,
Sure. Scan it like a pet, like a grocery store. You
yeah.
would scan some milk, or exactly?
Yeah, that actually is a pretty good good way to identify it. One thing that it absolutely does not have is a locator, because again, there were some folks that were fearful that it was a Big Brother way to sort of monitor the activity of the citizenry, and that is absolutely not what it has. It's basically just an ID, and what it has in there, it has the animal type, the animal's name, and then it has the owner's identifiers. So there is a scanning device that is used to read the chip in the animal, and it prints out or it displays who the proper owner is with the phone number and identifiers so they can make the phone call and reunite the pet to its proper owner.
Is it awfully big? Is it
no, it's tiny. I actually,
are we talking like the size of a thumbnail or
no, not the thumbnail, maybe like the size of a the end of a pencil, like the pencil.
Oh, like a little pencil eraser?
Yeah, like the end of your pen, right there. Okay. And again, I know we're on radio,
very,
so you can't see.
It's very small.
So it's very small.
It's like
suffice that to say, it's very small.
Okay.
We actually had our dog chipped. We had it done during that particular video shoot that we did. And she didn't even notice it. But the oddity is that it's not just dogs and cats. Because one of the questions that I asked with the folks at the shelter was, what's the strangest animal that you've ever had to chip? And I bet you'd never guess.
A turkey?
Oh, a turtle. I thought you were going to get it. It was a turtle. And I thought, well, that's a bit strange, because one would think that if a turtle decided to go ahead and, you know, break from the herd or something, that you'd be able to track it. But
well, I heard a very, very heart-wrenching radio story about a lost tortoise from KUT in Austin when I judged the Murrow Awards this year. So, I mean, like, if you love an animal, I mean,
true. And I mean, you know, anything can get away. And I guess if there's a long enough period of time between you actually have visual contact with the poor little fella, it could wander off. But
so these chips get put inside of a turtle or a dog or what have you. And so then what happened? Well, I guess with this particular ordinance, which dogs and cats and turtles would be required to have these chips? Would it be like my cat at home that never goes outside? Or?
Well, usually what it is they just advocate. It's like anything else. There is a lot of responsibility that comes with being a pet owner, and this is just one of those responsibilities. And the reason why we've decided to go ahead and codify that is to make sure that people are treating their pets properly and that they are taking care of their pets and they are being responsible with their pets. And generally the way that it would be done through the process of licensing. It can be done through a veterinary clinic that provides that service. And it's only at a minimal charge. I believe it's $15. And even the other night, because we had asked the question if hypothetically somebody couldn't afford that. And the folks at Almost Home said, sure, the priority is to get the animal chipped. The cost is secondary. So it's a good spirited thing. And it really does benefit us as a community. Because again, when you look at the overcrowding that we have at our shelters, and you look at the only real recourse that they have after going through trying to relocate some of the animals, you know, because we're all trying to push towards no kill. It's a good solution.
So you said codified. Is this already in the law right now?
It was passed. It has to go for a second reading.
Okay.
Next month.
So what happens if somebody has an animal that isn't chipped and somehow it gets out? Does that person get in trouble?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that they would get in trouble, but not that I'm trying to dodge the question, but generally if the animal escapes and we're not aware of who the owner is, it's difficult for those two components to come together. Because usually what happens when an animal escapes, the first thing that they do is they call the shelter. And the shelter will say, you know, they say, we've got a brown lab, you know, Newfie mix. So, okay, would you come by and have a look? And there has to be a process. And again, I'm not familiar with all the protocol that the shelter operates under. But generally what that means is that they would have to go through a process to try and identify the pet and make sure that they would be giving it to the proper owner. Then at that time, there could be some fee assessed, or they could just go ahead and automatically chip the dog when it comes in.
I have one more pet chipping question. And this is ostensibly to cut down on stray animals and to reunite stray animals with their owners. Aren't most of the pets that end up at the shelter stray animals whose owners maybe don't want to find them?
Well, that is yet another problem. You know, there are a lot of irresponsible pet owners and some criminal pet owners that use the animals for some other motive than just having a pet around the house. And a lot of that goes through the animal control system. We have both cities have animal control officers that deal with those issues, and they have some enforcement powers, so they would go ahead and take the appropriate action in the event a situation like that should arise.
I guess I'm just wondering how much an effect putting the chips in the pets would have if they're only for when a person should come in for an impounded stray. How often does that indeed happen?
And well, the frequency percentage? Is pretty, it's pretty low. Because we live in a pretty good community, and there's a lot of folks that generally, and I'm speaking on this side of the river, where people take their pets and they take their pets' health seriously. Because I can't, obviously respond to the other side. But the fact of the matter is that it is yet another opportunity for us to try and do the right thing for our population, try and make sure that we're serving our community correctly and offering an opportunity for chipping your animal so that it doesn't wander off, so that it can be relocated and reunited to the proper owner, I think is a good course of action to take.
All right. And that will be up for second reading next month.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Sarah Fenton, sitting in for Stan Jastrzebski. In the studio with me is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. If you have a question for Mayor Dennis, please call us at 765-496-1999. Moving on to a timely topic, Lafayette across the river is considering adding, among other protections for veterans and age, gender identity to its human relations ordinance. At the meeting, detractors' most common concerns, I was there, centered around privacy, modesty, and safety. West Lafayette's Human Relations Commission has written such protections for gender identity. When did that go into effect, and how has it worked for you?
Well, we've had it for a couple of years. You know, one of the really cool things about our city here is that we're pretty progressive when it comes to making sure that we provide the proper protections for our population. And in this particular instance, we've really not experienced any difficulty. Our Human Relations Commissions is generally the sort of the tip of the spear, as it were, on taking complaints, and we've not had anything brought forward that would challenge the integrity of that ordinance.
And so were there similar concerns when West Lafayette implemented the law?
We had people who were definitely concerned. There is, with any ordinance that has the potential to affect somebody's lifestyle, with issues that are perceived to be social issues, you're always going to get both sides of the spectrum, both supporting and then challenging the issue, and West Lafayette's no different. But we always have tried to do what we feel is the right thing. And sometimes it's not socially correct. Sometimes you get a lot of political pushback on things. But West Lafayette has always prided itself on being an open and welcoming community. And since I've been mayor, I've been making sure that we continue to do that. I feel very strongly about that. And so during the debate of when we were going to go through with this, the pushback was relatively light. You know, we didn't get a lot of folks coming up there and saying that, you know, all this evil was going to happen. We basically had a lot more support than we did detractors.
Has anybody in Lafayette come to West Lafayette and asked about what kind of experience you've had?
Not really, no. At least not me. You know, maybe some of my staff have been approached, or some of our counselors have, but personally, no. But again, you know, I've been a pretty strong advocate. I've been mayor for starting my ninth year now. So I think people are pretty, they understand where I stand. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the more open, the more accepting we are as communities, the more positive people perceive us. And when you are, you know, involved in a college community, you know, your hope is that you bring the best and the brightest to your community, regardless of other issues. And that's been sort of a driver for me as mayor. And I know that's the way Purdue feels as well.
So you would recommend Lafayette following West Lafayette's lead?
Yeah, sure. They can use us and the interaction that we've had as a good example of how things really do work and work well.
And Lafayette's ordinance also wants to add veterans status as a protected class. Does West Lafayette have protections for military veterans? And if not, would you consider writing some of those into law?
That's a great question. I think we do. I think we do. And if we don't, it would be a no-brainer to get done. I'm sorry, I can't answer that because I don't have the information in front of me.
Definitely something that can be looked up.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Again, this is Sarah Fenton in the studio at WBAA with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. If you are listening at home and have a question, you can call us at 765-496-1999. So recently, West Lafayette hired a new economic development director, Eric Carlson. Tell us more about Eric Carlson and why, of all the people you interviewed, you thought he was the right pick.
Well, first off, it was pretty complimentary to the city. We had a bunch of applicants apply for that position, and Eric rose to the top pretty quickly. He brings, regardless of where you live, you know, there are certain hometown interests that need to be addressed. College communities are unique throughout the states because we serve a different population. It's a transient population, and they bring in almost every 4 years. It's almost like a complete change in philosophy. So when it comes to having a director of development, you want to make sure that somebody has a bit of experience with that. And Eric does. He came from a college community, so he at least understands how we are.
You came from Lexington, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing is Eric has worked for economic development interests in the past, so he gets economic development too. But there's a lot more to it than just that. It's not just a matter of finding the next Apple store or the next Trader Joe's to come into your community. It's more about making sure that the community evolves in the right way. It's knowing that there's a lot of codependency within communities. And it's also making sure that you bring in things like arts and culture into your community also. And Eric has a great background in both those areas. He also is a take charge kind of guy. I mean, not, you know, militantly or anything, but he generally understands that, you know, in order to represent the city of West Lafayette well, we need to be recognized and respected. And he, just in the short time that he's been here, has done a great deal in getting out and meeting and greeting folks that are going to be pivotal for his and our success.
How does somebody direct economic development? Like I know you're saying a lot about like facilitating businesses and partnerships and that kind of thing, but exactly what does someone in this position do?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that. I mean, there is the marketing of your community. And a lot of times when there are communities that when you've got a rather significant interest in your backyard, such as Purdue, you really don't need to do much marketing. I mean, people know where you are. They know about you. You've got an internationally recognized brand. So that's a real, real leg up. But you have to understand the uniqueness of your community, and we really are unique. You generally won't see smokestacks in West Lafayette. You're going to see rooftops and treetops, and we're very proud of that. We've got very strong neighborhood associations that we work with very well. Eric gets that, and he knows that that's going to be a lot of what he's going to be dealing with. But when it comes to actually marketing our community, you have to understand what the base level understanding is across the country of communities that are of a college makeup. And with ours, because of the engineering school, because of what we do with Purdue Sports, because of what we do with a lot of the other schools and academic areas in the city of West Lafayette, that's a real draw. But we also want to make sure that the industry that comes in recognizes that they've got a really strong workforce graduating every year, well, actually every semester from Purdue. And our dream is to make sure that we would have somebody that has that brand new, you know, Purdue degree, can walk through the door of a business in West Lafayette and get a job before the ink dries. And I know that's an old cliche, but that's what we would like to see happen. Eric understands that, and he realized these incredible opportunities that we have, specifically now that we're doing the State Street Project and with the Innovation District on the west end of town.
Mm-hmm. And I know he was a reporter before he was in economic development, correct?
Yeah, he was one of you guys.
Yeah. Well, you could do worse.
You could do worse, exactly.
Were you concerned that he came from a background that was different?
No, that's what we want. You know, there is, and again, it gets back to what sort of our philosophy is here in West Lafayette, specifically the city of West Lafayette. If you have the basic skills, and yet you've got a lot of unique and diverse experiences, you're going to be a better fit because you're going to be thinking outside of the box. And that's what we've encouraged Eric to do. You know, we want him to look at this community with a set of fresh eyes and realize, hey, you know, this is what would be a great fit here. Or go up to people and be able to ask the questions. You know, how did you get here? What did you like? What didn't you like? And then that will empower him to be able to do more recruiting. And then better yet, to find things that are going to be a better fit for this city.
Yeah, it's interesting how you make a distinction. It sounds like between Lafayette, you say we're not going to see smokestacks here. Mm-hmm. As a college community, it seems like there would be a little bit different values. Mm-hmm. And would you, how as a college community, are the economic needs different? And you mentioned this a little bit when it comes to getting graduates to work here.
Yeah. Well, it depends which group you talk to, because those 4 years of college, 4, 5, 6, depending on how long it takes you to get through, each year, as you become more familiar with the community, your needs change. You know, think about it. When you were a freshman, you know, you went from somewhere else, you came here, and you were put basically into a student warehouse, which is a dorm. And so your needs are more social. But as you grow up and mature through your college experience, your needs become more practical. And as you become more informed as an adult, you want to make decisions, you want to have options, whether it be through retail processes or through employment options, to find other things to do. A lot of times when I go and speak to the student government, both undergrad and graduate here at Purdue, it's amazing what the interests are. You know, they often have interests that have, when the underclassmen generally have interests to deal with things that they can do when they walk. They want to walk to stores. They want to walk to bars. They want to walk to restaurants. But as they get older, they're more concerned about employment opportunities. They love this community, and they want to stay here. So they want to find employment opportunities. So we often gravitate towards those needs to make sure that we can satisfy that community.
That's a nice segue into my final sort of topic. And we only have about 2 minutes left of the program, but really quick, Purdue has said this year it's housing a record number of students on campus. Students are coming back to Purdue to roost the third week of this month, starting on the 15th. Does the city have a plan of attack on managing the flow of people and vehicles?
I like the way you say that, attack. Us and them,
well, huh? When you're a non-student dealing with those drivers.
Oh, you know. It is going to be... It's going to be interesting to see how things go this first semester. Again, State Street, the roads, things are going to be changing. Some roads that are one-way are going to be two-way, trying to get across the river because there's this great big CSO project going. It is going to be a challenge for everybody. And the best way I can answer that question is please, please, please be patient. Be patient. Our long-term, you know, permanent residents of West Lafayette, be patient. Our student population, be patient. Our visitors, people that come across the river, be patient, because it is going to be rather messy. It's going to be difficult now with move-in. It's going to be difficult during the football season with home games. It's just going to be a challenge. But like I've told everybody that's asked, or should I say that stopped to provide guidance to me about how we should run these projects, this is progress. You know, we have an opportunity here like no other city in the country to where we can actually build a new community in one fell swoop. So please, just be patient.
Yeah, it seems like it might be sort of the first big test for the road closures, you know,
students
coming in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, I think that is, will Happy Hollow Road be open by the time? In quick 15 seconds, will it be open by the time students come in?
The quick answer is probably. Our hope is to get it done this construction season. But like any road project, you think that everybody assumes that you just roll down some asphalt and everything is fine, but it requires a lot more than that, but it's going smoothly.
That would be nice. Thank you so much for listening to Ask the Mayor with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. You can see more about our program on our website, wbaa.org. You'll be able to listen to this program there and also this evening on WBAA News, 9:20 a.m. This is Sarah Fentum signing off. Thank you so much for listening.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.